Buaya ina mua.
Ngang fa mawalalo male fa loalo o te fa talo fa tuai ile mamalu o le au fa longo longo ile nei tai a fau talo fa lava ma lole soe fu male langi mama fa fetai ila wa fionga Dr. William Cunningham mo lo fa tasi mai ile nei tai a fau mi ile atu
greetings all.
Another windy, dark, and cold as morning. But hey, look, praise the Lord for all the blessings we have. Always grateful for the gift of life, being surrounded by our loved ones. Have to. Some of us didn't wake up this morning, and some families out there are grieving for one reason or another. So all praises to God for the gift of life, for us still here. We've been raised up this way. Yes, yes. Well, as some of you may know, especially to all you proud, loud and proud New Wayans out there, it is New Way Language Week. So yes, whakaalofalahi atu ki o motolu. The Pacific Language Weeks we have here in New Zealand is an effort to maintain and promote heritage languages. The theme for the New Way Language Week this year is Tokiofa ofania mokoina e wangahau New Way, which means treasure, love, and cherish the New Way language. Treasure, love, and cherish the New Way language. I like that theme. So yes, I encourage you all to go and find an event happening for New Way Language Week in your area, in your community, and take part in the vibrant celebrations. Get out there amongst our fellow New Wayans. But at the end of the day, we all belong to one race. We all one. The human race. It's all about love and understanding, having and showing respect to all. Ko mele mele e hingoha aku. My name is Mau Puka. I am your host today for Te Ama Radio. And just a little background on Te Ama Radio. We have been on air serving our community since 2012. Well, since 2009 actually. We include all the hard work and raising awareness we did and laid down for Like Minds, Like Mind Project, a national program to increase social inclusion and reduce stigma and discrimination for people with the experience of mental illness. We had the likes of Sir John Kirwan, Johnny Angel, the Pacific Elvis, Elevesi, and Fale Puka leading the charge. It was hard work, but well worth the effort, promoting mental health wellness and education at the community level. I loved it, still do. And our vision for Te Ama is simple. You know, I bring on guests that I know in my heart that have made and continue to make actual and a huge positive difference to all people in our communities through the work they do. Te Ama serves as a community radio health broadcast as a contribution to improving the health and well-being outcomes of Pacific peoples in the Greater Auckland region, New Zealand, the Pacific region, and globally. As the host of this small community radio, I've been blessed with the caliber of individuals that have walked into the studio, Pacific leaders, and leadership stories which share the vast knowledge and experience on how Pacific peoples can have a better understanding and knowledge around health and well-being in Aotearoa, New Zealand, and the Pacific Islands. Utilizing the diversity and wide range of Pacific peoples, the personal and professional backgrounds of these leaders, exposed to the struggles and triumphs in living the Kiwi dream, the reason their parents, grandparents came to the land of milk and honey, and the learning from their journeys. You know, I feel so blessed to have had the opportunity to sit down with a few of these individuals. They are a huge inspiration to our people and our communities. And I know there are many, many more out there that I can't wait to bring them in the studio. Te Ama. And today, boy, I'm excited, man. I've been thinking and trying to get this guy for a while. You know, we kept in touch from time to time over the years. And look, I knew this guy when he started out with his medical studies and the direction he chose. I actually thought you were destined for professional sports. I watched a few of your games and also the circle of boys you played with were heading already in that professional environment. Well, folks, and all out there, my listeners, right here in the studio with me, I have Dr. William Cunningham. He is an eye surgeon. That's right. He operates on eyes, cataract, and what's that word? Will, Dr. Will?
Retinal.
Yeah. Retinal. Surgeon, to be more specific. What he does, not many can do or have the expert or specific skill set here in Aotearoa, New Zealand. That's all of New Zealand. And you know, the more I looked into Dr. Will's professional background, the more in awe, and to be honest, the more confused I got, because to me, the eye is such a delicate area, and you know, with the loss or deterioration of eye, of our vision, I can imagine it will greatly diminish and affect one's quality of life and life in general. So I got so many questions to ask Dr. Will in regards to his eye surgeon profession and the difference he is making, repairing, restoring, and protecting patients' visions that have been damaged or have eye diseases. So without further ado, I'd like to say, Talofa, Dr. Will, how are you? Thank you for being here.
Oh, taloha ni, mele. Thanks. Aloha. Thanks for having me on the show. It's a great honour and privilege to be here today. Yeah.
Thank you, Dr. Will. With all my guests, I like for them to share with us, our listeners, a bit about themselves, Dr. Will. So is it okay if you share with us just a bit about yourself growing up?
Yeah, sure. I was born here in Auckland, 1980, and my dad was from England,
yes,
and he moved here in the 70s and met my mum, who's Samoan,
yes,
and she grew up mostly in Ponsonby in Auckland here. Okay. I actually grew up just down the road here from Unitech, for the first 3 years of my life, and then we decided to move out to the country, which was a great upbringing, actually. We grew up in Paraki, which is just northwest of, of Auckland. And, yeah, it was good growing up in the country. Had that typical sort of Kiwi upbringing. Most of my mates were farmers and, you know, got to hang out on the farm, ride bikes and, you know, poke fun at sheep and that sort of stuff. And, yeah, pretty early on, I like most other Kiwi kids, I suppose, started playing rugby. At that point in time, obviously, as a young kid, education's not really at the top of the list. So,
that's right.
So, no, played a lot of rugby. And, yeah, I was lucky enough to make one of the rep teams out there when I was 10. And that, I suppose, that progressed to winning or being awarded a scholarship to attend Mount Albert Grammar.
So you went to you attended primary out in Paraki.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, and then you did pretty good with your sports, rugby, and then you got awarded a scholarship to attend MAGS.
Yeah, yeah, correct.
Yeah. Keep going, yeah.
And, yeah, with that scholarship, it was a combined academic sporting scholarship, and it enabled me to obviously go to MAGS, and I was at boarding school there, which was a big sort of shift for me, coming from, you know, growing
from
up
country.
In a small country. And I suppose even though I'm Samoan, in the country there weren't many, you know, Polynesians around. So apart from, you know, my cousins visiting, MAGS was a big shock for me.
A lot of islanders.
Yeah.
Yes.
And, yeah, not just the makeup of the school, I suppose, it's more because a big thing for me was to play rugby when I went to MAGS, and just the pure size of the guys you came up against, there was a big difference there as a young sort of, you know, 12, 13-year-old from the country. And that was a big shock. But, no, it was really good attending MAGS. Excellent school, academics and sporting. And I stayed in the hostel most of the time there. And I suppose, you get that whole boarding school experience as well. You know, you make friends you probably wouldn't normally make friends with. And, yeah, that was all part of the experience,
Of being at MAGS, you got to meet a lot of different boys from different backgrounds, different ethnicities.
Yep.
Well, I know you cracked the first 15 back in 97-98, and rugby, obviously, for all school kids at that age is it's a big part of their lives. But from an academic perspective, how did you go with MAGS, and did you have any idea or inkling what you wanted to achieve back then?
Academically, I suppose I've always done pretty well academically, and before coming here today, I was trying to think of, you know, why that's the case and why maybe some others might not do so well academically, and I think it starts from a very young age. So although I mentioned that rugby was a big part of my life, so was education, but not necessarily in the formal way. A lot of my education was at home with my parents. And, you know, an example would be a lot of my spare time. So if we're sitting there watching the television or not doing much, my dad would ask me various questions. So he's, you know, say, what's the capital of so-and-so, or what's...
Yes.
X percent of, you know, whatever. And that sort of teaching, continuous education, was always a big part of my upbringing.
Yes.
And I think that prepared me well for high school, and I suppose the advantage in attending one of the bigger grammar schools like MAGS or Grammar or wherever it may be in New Zealand is that they can offer accelerated learning. Mm. So, for me, I did everything a year ahead, and then basically in your second to last year, you do your final year of schooling, and then you can do it again if you want to in your final year.
Absolutely.
And so, yeah, I suppose, yeah, what I'm trying to say is that it started from a young age, and Mags took it to the next level, I suppose, and along the way, the reason I got there, I suppose, was because of rugby. So,
yes,
yeah. So I'm not sure if I'm explaining myself.
Absolutely.
Well.
So you made the most of that rugby scholarship,
yeah,
and having that grounding from your parents,
yeah,
spending that time with you and asking you, almost like leading questions to kind of get you thinking, you know, other than just focusing on the rugby. And you know, I read your surgeon profile on the Eye Institute website, and yeah, you did mention we all want to be an All Black, but then my question I wanted to ask you, because you know you're doing really well, you know, you made coming up through the you know, the age group reps, repping Auckland, North Harbour, but then you mentioned you didn't want to be part of that stereotype, or that you know, or brawn, no brains. So, I guess what I'm saying is, you probably already explained it, but that mindset you had, or when did you realize that you didn't want to be just a rugby player?
Yeah, that's a tricky one for me. I suppose I always wanted to be both.
Yes.
But for most of my teenage years and even into my early 20s, I think sporting or rugby was still at the top of the list. And it wasn't actually until I had to make a choice at medical school that was the real turning point for me. So I went to medical school not really knowing what I wanted to do, but sort of knowing that would be a good career option.
Yes.
But around my second, third year of medical school, I failed a few examinations purely because I was playing too much rugby and not studying enough. And the dean called me in and asked me, you know, what's going on. And basically I had to make a choice, and I chose my, you know, medicine over rugby, and I haven't really looked back.
Absolutely.
That would have been a tough choice for you to make at that time. You would have been in your prime physically.
Well, yeah, it's easy to say that now, you know, and like I mentioned earlier to you, you know, every kid grows up wanting to be an All Black. And there are plenty of old fellas around like me who sort of, you know, you meet them and say, oh, I could have been an All Black and all that. But in all honesty, there's so many good rugby players in New Zealand. To make it to that top level is very, very difficult. And I knew that. I knew I was okay at rugby, but I deep down I think I knew that I wasn't ever going to make it right to the top. And, hence... You know, I chose medicine, yeah.
Hey, let me ask you, you know, you were at that level when you were playing rep rugby. You know, I don't want to put you on the spot, but, you know, with the circle you hung out with, the circle you played with, could you see that they had the same, balance that you had with sports and academics?
Some did, yep. And
that's good.
Someone who comes to mind is Eliota Fuimono. He's also a lawyer as well as a pretty well-known rugby player. And there were some who obviously had, you know, that mix in mind, but plenty of others who were purely focused on the rugby.
Absolutely.
And some of them did actually go on to, you know, become All Blacks,
yes,
et cetera.
That's right, yeah.
But... at the same time, I know plenty who didn't, and then I suppose the problem is there, as you're probably aware, is that you don't have a lot to fall back on.
Absolutely.
So personally, I think it's always good to have a backup plan, yeah.
Good balance. Okay, so let's focus on, you made that choice, Dr. Will, to focus on your studies. Tell me, what did you, how did it go?
Well, after dropping rugby, it was pretty easy, actually, because then that was my primary focus. I decided I was going to, you know, put my all into my studies, and it paid off. So, you know, at medical school, I'd study for 1 to 2 hours a night. I had a little, you know, program going, and it was great. And, I did, you know, make the most of it, and I was lucky enough to be awarded some prizes at medical school with that hard work. But it was really just the decision to commit and taking it from there.
Yeah. Can you elaborate a bit more with me in regards to your study, Dr. Will, in regards to your studies? You had an opportunity to, you graduated and you could have been, if I'm correct, you could have been settled to be a GP. Is that correct? But you decided to further or head into a more specialised area?
Yeah, to become anything in medicine, you need to enter a training program.
Okay.
So, if you want to become a GP, then you need to enter, I think it's a 4-year training program.
Okay.
So the usual sort of timeline is that you finish medical school. You're a house surgeon and the doctor for a few years, a house surgeon in the hospital for a few years, and from there you can choose your specialty of choice, be it GP, general surgery, orthopedics, whatever you'd like to go into.
So share with me which specialised area you decided to get into.
Well, for me, I entered medicine not really knowing what I wanted to do. But I was lucky enough to have a family friend and someone I now call a close mentor who was an ophthalmologist at the time. So during my 4th year of medical school, I spent some time with him, followed him around for a few weeks, got to see what it was like to be an ophthalmologist or an eye surgeon. And from there, I could see somebody similar to myself, and he's also of Māori ethnicity, and also an ex-rugby player. So, I was having that mentor that sort of got me onto the ophthalmology, and from there, I knew that's what I wanted to do.
Can you please share with our listeners what? And so, I've been having problems pronouncing their word properly.
So, there's ophthalmologists and optometrists. So
okay.
Optometrists are generally someone you'd go and see to, you know, measure your prescription, get your glasses, but they can also do, they're also very capable of performing, you know, an overall eye health check. So they can check you for diabetes, glaucoma, macular degeneration, all the common eye problems. And as an ophthalmologist or an eye surgeon, we always recommend seeing an optometrist every year just for an overall eye health screen. And from there, if there's anything that requires our input, you can be referred on.
Okay. So, Dr. Will, just got some questions here for you. What is the most common eye condition afflicting New Zealanders?
The big sort of top three are glaucoma, macular degeneration, and then diabetes. And if you're thinking about the Pacific population, it's going to be diabetes. I suppose another very common problem is cataract, and that's across the board. That happens to everyone at some stage. That's a normal eye condition that everyone gets as we get older.
Can you share with us what is a cataract?
A cataract is basically just a clouding of the lens inside the eye. So if you look into somebody's eye, you've got the coloured part. In the middle of the coloured part is the pupil. And behind that is the lens, which is like having a lens in the camera. It focuses the light onto the back of the eye. the back of the eye has the retina, the camera film, which picks up the light, sends it to the nerve, to the brain.
Okay. That's what a cataract is.
So a cataract is a clouding of the lens.
Clouding of the... So where you come in is you try and clear that clouding on the lens?
Yeah, so for me as a cataract and a retinal surgeon, say if somebody comes to me with poor vision from a cataract, essentially what we do is remove that frosted lens and replace it with a clear plastic lens, and that clears the vision. I also mentioned that diabetes is a big problem.
Absolutely, man. I got diabetes type 2, so I was very curious for you coming in to share that, yeah?
Yeah, so diabetes is, obviously a systemic problem. We're unable to control your blood sugar, and over time, having high blood sugar damages the blood vessels throughout the body, so it can damage the blood vessels to the nerves, so you can lose your peripheral sensation. It can damage the blood vessels in the kidney, so you can develop kidney problems. And
Absolutely.
With the eye, at the back of the eye, there are a lot of, throughout the eye, there are a lot of blood vessels. And a common place for diabetes to affect the eye is the retina. And within the retina, there are lots of blood vessels that are susceptible to diabetes. And over time, those blood vessels become leaky. They can leak fluid into the retina and diminish the vision that way. They can also start to grow new blood vessels, which do bad things. So they can bleed inside the eye. They can detach the retina and essentially blind you. So it's worth controlling your diabetes.
So just trying to take in what you've just said. So, Dr. Will, just bear with me. So when, okay, I'm talking from a patient that has diabetes and it has affected their eyesight.
Mm-hmm.
So when a diabetic patient comes to see you,
yep.
It's quite chronic and advanced. Is that correct?
No, because... everyone who has diabetes in New Zealand should be enrolled in a retinal photo screening program. So that's where every 1 to 2 years...
Get your eyesight examined?
Well, you...
Check?
That's part of it. But another big part of it is they take photographs at the back of your eyes. And that's something that your general practitioner or your family doctor can arrange for you. And that's the best thing you can do, because that's going to pick up any early change. And like most medical problems, the earlier you pick it up, the better the outcomes.
Okay. And Dr. Will, what is the third common eye condition?
So
cataracts, diabetic retinopathy.
Yep.
And what's the third one?
So glaucoma.
Glaucoma.
That's
okay.
a pressure-related damage to the nerve at the back of the eye. That's more common as you get older. And then another big problem is age-related macular degeneration.
I suppose that's a natural cause of, as you get older, you're...
Well, not everybody gets it, but, it's more common as you get older, and that's where you can... damage the macula at the back of the eye, which is responsible for your sharp central vision.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Will. And I understand that you divide your time between the Eye Institute and the Green Lane Hospital.
Yep.
Do you come across a lot of patients on the public waiting list that need treatment?
In the past, actually even prior to me becoming a doctor, waiting lists were a big issue. And then just prior to me coming into ophthalmology, there was a big drive to reduce, the waiting list times within ophthalmology, specifically related to cataract surgery.
Okay.
So during my time, the waiting lists haven't been too bad, actually. So the government has a policy now that people should wait no longer than 4 months for their surgery, whatever type of surgery it may be, in the public system.
So that's a good waiting time as opposed to private?
Yeah, I suppose it's all relative. So say if somebody's coming privately, yeah, they can get their surgery sooner, but if you compare it to, say, the UK system, people are still waiting much longer than 4 months.
So our health, public health system waiting time in New Zealand is very good, specifically to for eye cataract treatment.
For most eye surgeries, I'd say, yeah, most can get their surgery within 4 months. There are obviously exceptions, and people will sometimes wait longer, but mostly people are waiting less than 4 months.
Okay, Dr. Will, if we were to go privately, obviously it would be a lot quicker.
Mm-hmm.
What would you like to share with us how we can speed up the process? I'm thinking insurance, medical insurance?
Yeah, so in New Zealand, a fair number of people have private medical insurance, and that depends on your insurance plan, but that for a lot of people that means you can go privately to have treatment.
Mm.
And not just with an eyes, you know, whatever medical issue you may have. And so if you're insured, usually the insurance company would cover your treatment privately, and there are varying schemes there as well. But yeah, what's the main advantage there? I suppose it is just it's purely a time thing, and there with eye surgery there are a few added options available that might not be available in the public system, but overall it's pretty comparable. It's mainly just a time difference.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Will. And also, you have been doing a bit of pro bono work in the Pacific.
Yeah.
Would you like to touch on that?
I suppose as a Samoan, all along I've known that I'd like to try and contribute somehow to the Māori and Pacific population, be it here in New Zealand or in the Pacific. For me, that meant waiting a very, very long time to be in a position where I could actually help. So as a medical student or a trainee eye surgeon, you're not really well placed to, I mean, you can go along and contribute and help in a smaller way, but if you want to make a bigger difference.
Yeah.
I kind of had to wait until I was, a fully-fledged specialist. And, I've been an ophthalmologist now for 3 to 4 years, and it's only now where I'm able to help. So one of my colleagues, Dr. Peter Haddon at the Eye Institute, he's been travelling to the Pacific for many years now, and, I thought, joining him would be a good sort of way to start to help.
Yeah.
And we've been travelling to Samoa and Fiji 3 to 4 times a year. And Fiji and Samoa are very lucky in that, in Samoa there's, in Western Samoa, there's one very good ophthalmologist there who sees the majority of eye patients in Samoa. They also have a local optometrist who helps a lot with the service there.
Yes.
And then in Fiji, there are a fair number of ophthalmologists, actually, and a big public eye centre where many ophthalmologists can provide treatment. So what we do on our trips is we don't actually operate. As a retinal specialist, so both Dr. Haddon and I are retinal specialists, so we pretty much commit our time to seeing retinal patients, which pretty much means we're mostly seeing diabetic patients.
Yes.
And what we do there is basically help to guide the local ophthalmologists in terms of what they should be doing with their diabetic eye patients. So, are they okay to watch? Do they need laser treatment? Or do they need surgery? And if they need surgery, sometimes those patients are coming back to New Zealand for treatment.
Thank you, Dr. Will. And you and your co-worker, you guys are looking at expanding your pro bono work in the Pacific to say, like, the Cook Islands, Tokelau Islands, other islands in the Pacific?
Yeah. There are lots of ophthalmologists doing this sort of work and who are, you know, giving up their time to go and help patients in the Pacific. So Rarotonga is a bit different in that, you know, most of their healthcare is covered under the New Zealand system.
Yes.
And they have a very close relationship with New Zealand, and there's already a very well-established group of ophthalmologists from New Zealand who visit there on a regular basis. Yeah, and not so much for the other Pacific Islands, though, so that's why for now we're focusing mainly on Samoa and Fiji. Tonga, I understand, has had various ophthalmologists throughout time who are there to help, and there may possibly be an ophthalmologist there now who's helping. In terms of Tokelau and some of the other smaller islands,
come under the New Zealand health system, eh? So
yeah, but still, I think, you know, basics. So with diabetes, that screening's got to be in place somehow. And with technology how it is now and artificial intelligence and things like that, there are other ways you can screen for diabetes. So there are apps on your phone and things like that, cameras that you can attach to a phone or a computer.
Yes.
Which I think is really the future in terms of screening for eye complications with diabetes. That way, you know, wherever you may be, most places, I suppose, have
internet. Yes.
And all you need is somebody to take a photo at the back of the eye and send it to somebody who's qualified to grade that photo.
That's amazing. That's the future right there, eh?
Yeah.
Okay, Dr. Will, what do you see as, I suppose right now, is the main concern to eye health?
Well, I suppose if you're thinking about, you know, the Māori and Pacifica population, diabetes is the big one, eh? It's just, you know, so common and can do so much damage. And people aren't just going blind from diabetes, you know. They're
losing limbs.
Limbs, kidney failure. And
dialysis.
And dying. And that's not good.
Okay. That is so true, Wills. Dr. Will, we don't want to touch on, we all know the stats, you know, PI and Māori always at the 2-3 times the rate of diabetes than other New Zealanders. Dr. Will, do you have any further personal challenges on the horizon?
So I suppose another thing we've just developed amongst the College of Surgeons is a Māori and Pacific committee, which I'm now the chair of. And that's a two or three pronged attack in terms of our goals there. So the first thing is that I'm one of only maybe three or four ophthalmologists out of, say, 150 in New Zealand that are of Māori or Pacifica background. So
amazing.
A big part of the committee's focus is to try and increase the number of Māori or Pacifica ophthalmologists or eye surgeons. The other part of the committee is to, you know, try and improve cultural awareness amongst our peers and colleagues. And then the third aspect of, or the third goal of the committee, is to ultimately try and improve health outcomes for our people.
Hey, can we touch on that second one you just mentioned, you know, raising cultural awareness amongst your peers? Because, you know, you're just a small percentage. How is that for you as being the only Samoan or PI at your level with what you do?
Yeah, I think there's another Samoan ophthalmologist who's just graduated in Wellington, so I'm one of two Samoan ophthalmologists.
But share with me the struggles that you've had to deal with, or
to
challenges.
Well, to be honest, in New Zealand, I think we're a pretty culturally competent or culturally aware nation. For example, you know, growing up in the country, a big part of my upbringing was, you know, learning Māori and learning Māori songs and incorporating that culture into our education. Then you look at somewhere like Australia, and that's not necessarily the case. I think they have a much bigger challenge ahead in terms of, you know, trying to improve cultural awareness or cultural competence, whatever you want to call it, you know, within Australia. I think in New Zealand, most Kiwis are pretty good at it, yeah.
Thank you, Dr. Will. And the third one you touched on, did you say education?
Well, the first thing was trying to increase the number of ophthalmologists.
Yes, that's right.
The second one was cultural competence or awareness. The third thing is health outcomes. So
health outcomes, yes.
Yeah, how do we improve, you know, the diabetic epidemic amongst
ridiculous
our people?
Ridiculous epidemic amongst PIs.
Yeah.
So how do we?
that's the golden question, isn't it? Yeah. I think for me personally, first and foremost, it comes down to education and educating our people, you know, about diabetes and you know, risk factors and you know, all of that simple stuff that some of us might take for granted, but you know, a lot of the time you still see young kids walking around with
fizzy drinks, ice cream,
fizzy drinks.
Absolutely.
And I suppose the other side to it is you know, the socioeconomic status and all of that fits in, because if, you know, if you don't have enough, because let's face it, healthy food can be expensive. and if you don't have the funds, then, you know, why wouldn't you just nip down and, you know, grab a bottle of fizzy or grab some takeaways when it's actually cheaper?
That's right.
Yeah.
So that's the challenge right there. Dr. Will, we've only got about less than 7 minutes left. Is there anything else you would like to share or encourage our listeners? Anything?
I think, yeah, what you're doing here is really good. Just, you know, anything we can do to promote health or increase awareness, that can only help. And yeah, looking at your show and the guests you've had on, I really commend you for doing something like this. And, I can only encourage it more.
Thank you so much, Dr. Will. Look, we've come to the end of our show. And I feel like we've just getting started. I just want to thank you so much for your time. You know, salute. Much love, much respect for the work you do. You know, the work you do, and more so, you just being a good sort, a good fella. You know, I can imagine eye surgery is one of the most rewarding surgeries. I can picture one of your patients, or maybe one day myself. You know, on the following day after their surgery, you know, their iPad comes off and you see the sincerest smile you can ever witness. You know, I guess that's priceless, and keep doing what you do. You've always been an inspiration to me, Wilson School, and to numerous others, especially your parents and your sister, but more importantly, your beautiful young family. So God bless you and your ainga, my man. Thank you.
Yeah, mālo, Mally. And thanks for having me. It's been an honour.
Anytime you got some free time in your schedule, I'd love to bring you back on. Dr. Will, I think this is a good start for myself and for our listeners to to be more aware and be more educated around the work you do as an eye surgeon. Deal?
Deal.
Thank you, Dr. Will.
Thank you.
Cheers.